which has huge potential application. This is much more important than Higgs. Of course, Higgs is important from theoretical point of view, but from the practical point of view, it's totally irrelevant. Okay, I mean, there's no way that you can use Higgs for anything. But this monopole, the lifetime is infinite, live forever. So you can do many things, huge practical application. For instance, you can make magnetic current, okay? So this is why this is so important. So can we detect it? So far, of course, nobody has succeeded to detect the monopole. But here, the LHC has now reached the threshold to produce. This is 14 TeV LHC, okay? I'll tell you why this is the threshold. And of course, the matter, monopole and exotics detector at LHC is actively searching for this. The first data will come out in March. They'll take up the data, and then maybe you'll have a publication in June or so. Now, if detected, it will become the first topological elementary particle in human history. Okay? But of course, we have to know where to look at this. The crucial piece of information is the mass. Okay? So why didn't we find the monopole so far? And why the LHC now can produce it? So this is really a theoretical and experimental challenge. Okay. So first, I'll talk about history, okay? Of course, ever since the Dirac proposed this monopole in 1931, it has been an obsession, okay? Now, after Dirac, we know that we have Wu-Yang monopole, 69, Topolyakov, 74, and the Grand Unification monopole, 80. But all these were unrealistic, okay? Of course, except the Dirac. But I'll tell you that Dirac is also unrealistic. So in the realistic Weinberg-Salam model, you see here, there is no electroweak monopole. The reason was that people thought that this is impossible. In other words, standard model does not have the electroweak monopole. This was the famous Nogo theorem. The reason for this is mainly, of course, due to the Taubes. Taubes said that this is impossible. Okay? However,
I thought it was impossible because of the
topology. Yeah, Taubes said that this doublet doesn't admit this topology. But I'll tell you that this is not true. Yeah. So 97, of course, the monopole topology in standard model was proved. Okay, so there is monopole. And this has been constructed. And 1 year later, mathematically, this Yang is a mathematician, not the famous Yang. This is a mathematician Yang. And he proved the exact existence proof, mathematical proof. Okay, and called this Chomsky monopole. Now, till recently, this monopole was completely forgotten. Nobody was interested in it. But after the discovery of the Higgs, it became hot again. Because Higgs confirmed the standard model. And if standard model is correct, then you must have it. Okay? And the Medal is actively searching for this. Now, let's go through quickly why the standard model has this monopole topology. So this is, of course, a standard model. And I choose this ansatz. So this is doublet. Okay? Notice that this doublet has the string singularity along the negative gx. This part is string singularity. Okay? Now, of course, the SU2 part, this is just like a topped polygon. Okay? This part is Wu-Yang part. Okay? which can be regularized with this f function. So this is standard. Now the U1 part, hypercharged U1 part, this of course also has a string singularity along the negative z-axis. Okay? However, if you, this is what I said, this string singularity can be removed if the hypercharged U1 becomes non-trivial. Okay? So then this ANSAT gives you a spherically symmetric monopole ANSAT. Okay? Now I'll explain in a minute, I'll explain why this hypercharged U1 is non-trivial, but let's go ahead. Now, because this ANSAT contains, let's go back to this, contains the Coulomb part, okay? This is the Coulomb part. This SU2 part, both SU2 part and U1 part has Coulomb part, so that it could, in principle, have electric charge as well. So it becomes diode, okay?
Sorry, did you define what F of R was?
Pardon?
What was F of R?
Well, this, you see, the top polyhedron, they are regularized. This has point singularity at origin, okay? So they can regularize this with F function. By,
so that's their same function, isn't it? The
pardon?
F and R, F of R is the same function that...
As talked?
Yeah.
No, not exactly. The solution is different, of course, but the answer is the same.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
So it's not
so
the
what
same
is the
function.
Solution? Tell us
the decision. Oh, I'll show you. Okay, yeah. This is my talk. So of course, with this Weinberg angle, we have this electromagnetic A and G boson. Okay, and then in terms of this physical field, we have this Lagrangian. This of course standard model. And then, in terms of physical field, the ANSAT set I showed you has this form. So you look at this, and then this is the Coulomb part, and this is exactly the Dirac part. Okay? But of course, we have the W boson and G boson. Okay? So this is hybrid between Dirac and the top polyhedron.
So is there a parameter that...
Pardon?
Imagine that if I just had the U1,
yeah,
I could make a Dirac monopole for the U1 the way I would do for electromagnetism. Is there some parameter that says that that this is some mixture of that Dirac monopole and I guess there's a you've got the Tupp one.
But this ANSAT just tells that this is Dirac and this is the Tupp polyhedron.
But I'm asking, is there a modulus or was there a variable that you chose to have this particular thing, or could I make the whole thing live in the U1 and not have a Tupp part, for example?
I don't get your point. So what is your point?
I guess I'm asking, so one way I could make a monopole and standard model is to take the U1 and think of it like electromagnetism and just write a Dirac monopole for that, and just that, right? That's also...
Well, if you just put the W and Z to zero, then this doesn't have all. I show you the solution, okay? After I show you the solution, we can discuss about this.
Is it unique? I guess is it unique?
Oh, sure, it's unique. Yeah.
So I can't have a Dirac monopole in the U1 without having a SU2 monopole.
I'll show you here. This has a point monopole solution which has exactly the magnetic charge E over 4 pi. Remember that the Dirac monopole has the magnetic charge E over 2 pi. So this is not the Dirac monopole. The magnetic charge is twice bigger, but this is exactly Dirac other than that. Okay? So as you said, this does have a point singular Dirac monopole. Okay?
So can I just, so you must have both a U1 and an SU2.
Oh, sure, I'm talking
and,
about...
And do they have to mix together in a way that when you mix up A3 and Z, that it's all in the electromagnetic sector? Is that required?
Yeah, so I'm just talking about just this well-known standard model, okay?
But I thought you had said that there's a singularity and you need to add things to make it go away. So
this is singular, okay,
yeah.
Point singularity. So it looks very much like Dirac, except that the magnetic charge is twice. Exactly. Okay? So what other? Okay. Now, of course, you can generalize this. And so assuming this boundary condition, so this will remove the singularity at origin, SU2 singularity at origin. Okay? And this is the vacuum, asymptotic vacuum. And then you have this solution. This is Higgs, this is W, this is of course the Coulomb part of W and G. And here, if you look at this solution carefully, that this Higgs has exactly Higgs temperature. Mass is Higgs temperature.
What do you mean by this is the W? What do you mean by when you pointed to F and you said this is the W?
Well, I told you that the ansatz, this one. Double and that this is F. Okay. So this F has exactly this W damping, except if you have the electric part, this damping becomes a little bit different. Okay. But other than that, this is exactly the W damping, exactly like you expect. And also, this B part is the G boson part, and this has a G boson mass damping. Okay. So this is really physical. So the dressed Dirac monopole, not Dirac, but the magnetic charge twice, dressed Dirac type monopole dressed by W and G. The standard Weinberg-Salam, okay? Now this is the solution. Now this is, of course, G boson part, and this is the Coulomb part. So this is dion solution, okay? But if you can put this to be zero, A and G to be zero, and you have the exact monopole part, F, and F is W boson, rho is Higgs, okay?
What's the x-axis there?
Pardon?
I can't see what's the x-axis on the plot.
Which one?
The x-axis.
MWR.
X-axis
is MWR. MWR, okay? So the scale is MW. Okay, because this is standard, right? Now, of course, this dion has, as I told you, the singularity, a William monopole, this at the center, okay? So this can be interpreted as the William monopole, which has non-trivial dressing of Higgs, W, and G. So this is why this is hybrid between Dirac and the top polar. Okay.
Can you go back to the sketch? Can you go back to the previous slide for a second?
Okay.
Is the rho that's regular? I can't quite tell the graph.
Which
is rho or rho not?
Rho is Higgs. Okay, this is vacuum.
It's
not plane goes vacuum. Origin, rho vanishes. Okay. F is one at origin, which smoothened the point singularity, and asymptotically it goes to zero. Okay.
And there are three free parameters, if I understand you right. There's A naught, rho naught, and V naught.
Yeah, yeah.
Can I take one of those? So can I choose one of those parameters to make this thing live purely in the U1?
To what?
Does there exist a choice of A naught, V naught, and rho naught for which this becomes purely a U1 monopole with no SU2 component?
No, I mean the only singular U1 monopole that I showed you. At the beginning, if you put in any double end boson, G boson dressing, this is unique. Okay, there's no other. The only thing that you can have is this one.
No
electric part, no Higgs. This Higgs is vacuum value. Okay, so no Higgs, no W, nothing. Then this is just electromagnetic. Okay,
so that is singular.
Singular, yeah. This is like a Dirac, except that it has.
So you're saying if I want it to be non-singular, I've got to have some in the SU2.
Even if you have a W and G boson, you still have a singularity at origin, okay? Because I told you that this singularity remains, okay?
So
It's only the dressing.
I'm not sure. So can you just go back to that slide? There's I'm getting two messages, and I'm not sure which one is right. So could you go back to the slide where you showed the U1, where F is zero?
This one?
That one, yeah. That is a specific solution.
Yeah, this is a solution.
Could you move one slide forward?
Pardon?
One slide forward, please. Another one, I guess.
So this is the answer, okay? So only this part becomes the solution without anything, okay? Without all these others, this part becomes a solution.
Could you show me the slide that has the boundary conditions in it? You have something with f of 0 is equal to something, f of infinity is equal to something, and it's given in terms of a naught, b naught, and
go forward with you. Going
that one, isn't it?
This one. Can I choose? Oh, I see. So there's no choice here I can make which makes f 0, because you've made f of 0 equal 1.
Yeah.
So when you say that there's no choice of a naught, b naught, and rho naught that makes this into the U1 solution, that sounds like that's why.
Yes, yes.
But, so you're saying that there's at least two solutions. So the other solution was a legitimate solution. It's just not in this family.
You mean the singular one, only
the
U1 part.
Yeah,
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 yeah, sure.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so it'll become more and more clear as we go. Okay. So the thing is that the magnetic charge, this is electric charge, okay? The electric charge is determined by this is integration constant, arbitrary, A1, okay? But the order is the same, 4 pi, E over 4 pi. And this is magnetic charge, this is uniquely fixed, okay? And you can have a dion with negative electric and magnetic charge because you have this reflection symmetry, okay? If you reflect this, then you have anti-dion, okay? So now, why I told you that for this solution, it's crucial to assume that hypercharge U1 is non-trivial. And this is very important issue because in Dirac monopole, in the electromagnetic case, Dirac monopole doesn't have to exist because U1 in electrodynamics doesn't have to be non-trivial. Okay? So it's up to you. However, in this standard model, I will show you that U1 hypercharge and electromagnetic U1 has to be non-trivial. That means this monopole must exist. Okay? There is
just what's non-trivial mean here?
Okay, as I told you, my ANDAT has this string singularity along the negative GX.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so to remove the string singularity, you have to put two sections together, okay, mathematically, two sections together by gauge transformation. And then you can remove. In one section, you have string singularity along the negative g-axis, and then with the gauge transformation, you can put it to a positive g-axis, and then you patch two sections together, and then you have only point singularity there. You can remove this singularity. So this is exactly how you get this Dirac quantization condition. Okay. Now, as I told you, this is hypercharge, and this is this U1 part of SU2, okay? These two U1 should mix together to have this electromagnetic and the G boson, okay? Now, here the important thing is this A3, U1 of SU2, has to be non-trivial. This is well known mathematically because SU2 has a monopole topology, so the U1 part of SU2 has to be non-trivial. Now, if you want to combine two U1 together, these two U1 should have same topological structure. That means that since SU2 U1 of SU2 part is non-trivial, hypercharged U1 also has to be non-trivial to be consistent. Okay? So that's why here B2 has to be non-trivial, and as a result, electromagnetic A also has to be non-trivial. So this monopole has to exist. Okay? So this is a topological test of standard model.
Can you explain the consistency condition again? I don't quite understand. What goes wrong?
So here, you want to make a linear combination of two U1s, okay? So what you want from SU2 and what you want from hypercharged U1, okay? Now, if you want to make the combination, the two U1 has to have the same structure, same topological structure. Otherwise, you cannot combine. But we all know that this SU2 part is already non-trivial. So this hypercharged U1 has to be non-trivial, just to be consistent. Okay? This is a very subtle point, but very important point. Okay? And this is mathematics. Okay, so let's have to hurry. So this electrolytic monopole must exist. And then, but of course, ultimately, experiment should tell whether it exists or not. Okay? So this is why the discovery of this monopole becomes topological test of standard model. Nobody has done. We have all kinds of tests of standard model. This was all local test, not topological. This is the only topological test of standard model. Okay?
I'm reading your red line here. So if I understood the dynamics that you're describing, if I did not have the U1 factor in the standard model, then you would have said that the Tufte argument is true and there's no topology to support a monopole. But now you're saying I add the U1, and then the Tufte argument now is saying that the topology of the whole thing is just essentially becoming the topology of the U1. And that's, so you build it in, and that's why you have to have a U1 monopole.
Yeah.
But in your red thing here, you say that there's no option for it to exist, whereas I do have an option in E-NAM. Why is there no option in this?
In electrodynamics, U1, as I said, Maxwell's theory by itself is consistent. There's no contradiction in Maxwell's theory without monopole.
Yeah.
Okay? Now, Dirac showed you can generalize this by assuming this famous Dirac quantization.
Sure.
That means by making this U1 non-trivial. Okay, it's equivalent to this mathematical.
So why don't I have the same options as I have for Dirac and the electromagnetism? Because it's basically a U1 at the end of the day.
Because as I said, you have to add two U1 together, and one U1 is already non-trivial, so the other U1 has to be non-trivial.
So if I want a monopole sector, I have to do the same thing to both. But if I don't want to have a monopole sector, what's wrong?
Exactly. That's why. So if you don't want the monopole, then of course you can make it trivial. Okay. This is why I told you that this is a topological test of standard.
Yeah, but I think the question, and maybe this is what you're saying. The question is, you're saying we either have to have both or neither. But the red stuff suggests that neither isn't an option.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it seems to me you've either got to have it in both U1s, but isn't it an option to not have it at all?
The question is, as I said, so if you don't want this monopole and don't make hypercharged U1 non-trivial, theoretically you could still insist on this. But as I said, mathematically, this is inconsistent. However, what I'm saying here is that ultimately the test has to come from experiment, okay?
But the question
this is logical point. Inconsistency doesn't mean that the...
Are you saying the theory, if this thing, we cannot have solutions in the standard model without having this? Is that what you're saying?
Without having this?
Must all solutions of the standard model have this monopole?
No, I think all solutions.
Is it necessary for all standard model solutions to have this monopole, to have both U1s non-trivial, or is it possible to have both U1s trivial?
No, both U1 cannot be trivial because, as I said, this U, the SU2 part of U1 must be non-trivial.
Why?
This
why?
Is
why?
No, no.
That's the part. Why does it have to be non-trivial?
We understand that if you want to run a bowl, you say
well, okay, okay.
You say fine.
Okay. This is mathematics. Okay. This is why. Okay, first, why do we have we are monopoly in SU2 without string?
Well,
this is precisely
argument,
because
argument,
yeah,
that,
this is precisely because, in other words,
let me ask that question because that's so actually pertinent to the question that's being asked.
The machine turned itself off.
The normal argument would have been that if you have a grand unified theory or something, then I can always make a topologically trivial configuration out of a monopole and a monopole configuration that's very, very widely separated, and then cluster decomposition says I have to now have the sector where I have the winding number non-trivial. Whereas in the case of the U1 situation, nothing forces me ever to consider a configuration where I have two strings.
You see, I have no time, but believe me, this is mathematics, okay? So for instance, this U1 part, the reason why, let me first again explain. Let me tell you why I told you that this monopole has a magnetic charge twice bigger than Dirac. This is precisely the same reason. This U1 part of SU2, you see, just electromagnetic U1 has period 2 pi, okay? But SU2 part has period 4 pi. This is exactly why this has the magnetic charge twice. For the same reason, this the U1 of SU2 part is non-trivial, precisely because SU2 admit Wuyang monopole, which has no string. And if you choose a gauge transformation, then this becomes exactly Dirac monopole, okay? So this is why this U1 part of SU2 is non-trivial. This is mathematically well known. Just believe me, okay? I have no time to explain it more, but...
Your assertion, though, if I understood it right, is you're saying that supposing we could prove that there were no direct, none of these monopoles in nature, then you would say that the standard model is false. That's the point you're arguing.
Standard model is logically inconsistent. What I'm saying is, okay, logically inconsistent.
Unless,
but of course, nature.
Unless this thing is found, that's your claim.
Yeah.
If
this
monopole
is
not found, then you're saying the standard model is logically not consistent.
Exactly. This is my claim. You don't have to believe me, but this is my claim.
No, we should.
We
were
just trying to understand why you're making that claim.
We want to understand
yeah.
why you're
but,
making
but anyway, that claim. But anyway, let's go ahead because I have to tell you much, much more, okay?
But this is the interesting part.
Okay, so this is why this metal experiment is so important, okay? Now, this is metal team. This is. But this method is very, very, very interesting because you see, this is one of the very rare experiments which have no background at all. Because there is no background event which can mimic this monopole. Because this monopole has charged so strong that this track is just no other particle can make this track. So it's no background experiment. So if the monopole is produced, it's easy to detect, okay? The question is whether you can produce it or not. This is the issue. And this is also very cheap, very economic experiment because all the detector that you need is plastic. And you don't have to man this detector because this is a passive detector. You just collect the data in every 3 months, that's all. So it's most economic experiment at CERN, okay? Now, comparison with other monopoles. Of course, there are other monopoles, Dirac. As I said, Dirac monopole has to be generalized to the electric wave, and this is the one, okay? And the Wuyang monopole in QCD should make a monopole condensation, so you are not supposed to find a monopole solution in QCD, okay? Now, Todd-Polyakov is, of course, unrealistic. And the grand unification, there's no way that you can have it, okay? So this is the unique dualistic monopole. Now, but mathematically, all monopoles are families. They're related. Okay, basically, they're either Dirac type or Wu-Yang type. But Wu-Yang type, naked or dressed, okay? And the Wu-Yang type becomes Dirac in the singular case. So they're all the same. Mathematically, they're all related, okay? As I said, this electric monopole, magnetic charge is twice the Dirac. The reason is, as I said, this U1 part of SU2 has the period twice the U1 of Maxwell, okay? It's a very simple reason. Now, the question is, what is the mass? You see, so far, all this monopole search experiment was search in the dark without any lead, okay? This is a random search. So you really don't know where to look at. You only have to rely on the look. That's why it was so unsuccessful, okay? Now here, you can pinpoint the mass. So if you look at the energy of this monopole, the energy is made of two parts, this part and the other part. The important is this easier part is divergent, okay? So classically, the monopole has infinite mass. But of course, physically, infinite mass doesn't mean anything, okay? It's not real. So if the monopole exists, it must have finite mass. Otherwise, it doesn't exist, okay? Now, so how can you regularize this monopole and predict the mass? This is a big and important issue, okay? So I tell you that the monopole mass should be around 4 to 10 TeV. So the standard model scale, so far, everybody assumed the standard model scale is GeV, 100 GeV, okay? Now it's 10 TeV, okay?
So the solution is, I guess I misunderstood before, it's singular at the origin?
I'll show you how to regularize it, okay?
But the solution you're bringing down the bar is singular?
The original solution I showed you is singular.
Okay.
Okay?
But not in a pure gauge way. So it's not like a Dirac monopole where the singularity is a fake singularity. You're saying it's really singular and the energy density sees the singularity.
Yeah.
The Dirac monopole is singular as well.
Yeah.
But it's not in the energy density.
It is.
Is it?
Okay.
So this
is
the question is the divergence that you're seeing, is that just the divergence of a point charge interacting with itself?
It's like a Coulomb field in the electron, okay? Classically, electron has infinite energy because of the Coulomb singularity. Exactly the same.
So is it the same sense as a Dirac monopole?
Yeah, and the Dirac monopole is exactly the same, okay? So Dirac monopole, you cannot predict mass. And there is no way, as far as I know, there is no way how the Dirac monopole can be regularized or can be made to have finite mass. There's no argument at all. Okay. Now here, I give you three arguments. Okay. Why this has to be regularized and why this has to mass around this region. Okay.
So my fallacy is that the string has got no mass, but you're saying the end of the string has a specific, that's where the divergence
The string is a gauge artifact.
Right.
The point singularity is physical. Not gauge, okay? So the first major argument. So the reason.
So the next step, though, is going to be that if you can't predict the Dirac monopole mass, why should you expect to be able to predict this one? It sounds like it should be the same physics, and that it means that there's some.
Because this is a standard mode. This is not electromagnetic. This is electroweak, which has more structure. Okay.
Why don't we let him go on?
Yeah, yeah. Because
let him give his argument before you shoot.
So first, in the standard model, we all know that how W boson get passed. Okay, everyone knows this. Now the way how this molecule get mass is exactly the same as this spontaneous symmetry breaking. Okay, it's exactly like how W boson get mass, except that the coupling is different. In the W boson mass case, this coupling is electric. Okay, now here this is the magnetic part. And magnetic part is 1 over G coupling, okay? So this is mass term. This is monopole mass, monopole field, okay? This is exactly Wu-Yang monopole. So Wu-Yang monopole have this term, okay? And this term here, F is 1 over G. So the coupling is magnetic. In the W boson case, this is electric, okay? So this is purely dimensional argument. So this is why the mass should have this one over alpha factor here. So this mass should be bigger than one over alpha, bigger by the factor one over alpha than W boson mass. And that just gives you the number, 10 TeV. So this monopole mass should be of the order of 10 TeV. But this is too rough. Because we all know that LHC maximum energy is 14 TeV, so you have to predict, you have to have a better estimation, okay? Now, I'll show the scaling arm. I told you that there are, actually, if you look at it carefully, there are three energy terms. The energy of the monopole comes from these four terms. One is this SU2 part. This is U1 part, this is Higgs kinetic part, this is Higgs potential part. Now you can easily see that all these three, Ka, K5, V, they are all finite. This is divergent. So this kills you, okay? So the question is, can you make this finite? Now you can apply the Derrick's argument and have this scaling. And then, under the scaling, all four terms have different behavior. So if there is a regularized monopole, you must have this relation, okay? Now, as I told you, all three terms are finite. They are all very similar. They all are determined by AMW and 1 over alpha, okay? The same factor. The only thing different is these numbers. And these numbers are actually very small, okay? Now, since we know all these things, we can find what is KB with this. And then KB must be this. So in this case, the energy of the monopole has to be 40. So it's much better, okay? So the dimensional argument was 10. Now we have 4. So they are of the same order. So it's consistent, okay? Now the question is then, can you really regularize this? This is ultraviolet regularization, okay? Now this is very tricky. For instance, the Weinberg-Salam model is of course Bayer theory without any ultraviolet regularization. But in reality, for instance, in QCD, we have the after quantum correction, QCD produced confinement. So the Weyl theory doesn't mean really anything. Okay, you must find out effective theory. So then, can you find effective theory of standard model in such a way that you can have a finite energy monopole? This is the issue. Okay. Now. Let's consider this. This is standard model, except that this term. So I introduce electric permittivity for the U1 hyperchannel. Okay. Just consider this. Okay. And then you can easily observe that with epsilon, this goes to 1 asymptotically, this becomes the standard model. Okay? Only near the origin, short distance, ultraviolet region, this epsilon can be different. Okay? So this, in principle, could take into account the ultraviolet regularization. Okay? Now, the effect of this, you can easily see that the effect of this is to change the G prime of U1 hyperchars to this learning coupling. So this term effectively makes this hyperchars U1 coupling a learning coupling. So this can take into account the ultraviolet regularization. Okay?
Can I understand? So this is a coupling of the form Higgs over some.
Yeah, sure, yeah, exactly.
So wouldn't this introduce, for example, Higgs decays to four
times? Yeah, exactly. I come to this.
At a higher
yeah, I come to this.
So if I wanted to say, so is your punchline going to be that if you modify the same model in this way, you'll be able to find a regular your regular modeling hole, but if you don't, you won't?
Well, if you don't, you have the singular model. That
and
the
singular, and then the standard line would be suspensions you disregard it. They're not physical solutions.
Or that they are, and there's a parameter that you don't know, which is the mass of a monopole.
So.
A singular solution, I normally would say, you know, unless you show me why it's not singular, that should just be disregarded.
Or revised by new physics at high scale, like direct monopoles in dots.
Yeah.
But wait, let's let them continue. Okay.
Yeah. So with this modification, you have this change, okay? So this shows you that this epsilon changes the effective coupling, okay? The same way here, okay? So this changes the effective coupling to this. So this means that by choosing a proper epsilon electric permittivity, which can generate the real running coupling of standard model, okay? The real. Okay, you can, with which you obtain from perturbative calculation or whatever, okay? Then you can really implement this ultraviolet regularization with this effective action. So this Lagrangian can be treated as an effective action of standard model. This is my point, okay? So to see how this works, let us just choose epsilon to be this, okay? And then you can easily see that this produces this running coupling. Of course, this running coupling is not physical, not exactly what you have from this real standard model. But this shows you that in principle, you can have effective running coupling here, okay?
So your epsilon is varying on a scale with MR, is that right?
Yeah. Epsilon is function of Higgs.
So that sounds like then you've sacrificed the renormalizability of the standard model.
Well, we are talking about classical effective action, okay?
Well, you're talking about
this has nothing to do with the normalization, okay?
But part of the beauty of the standard model is that we know the theoretical error, we know what the quantum correction
is. No. You see, the logic is that, as I said, this effective action recovers standard model asymptotically, okay? Only it modifies the theory at the short distance. So this
short
doesn't have
the W mass, though, right?
Yeah.
Short means the W mass. It's essentially the scale over which epsilon is varying.
Well, the scale could be much smaller than W mass.
But if I do that, do I change the value?
As I showed you, this is MWR. Well, you can see, okay. But as I said, this is just an example, okay. Let's go.
But if the logic of the argument is you're saying that there's a unique prediction for the mass. And this is a way of getting it, but does the prediction that I get depend on the scale over which epsilon varies, for example?
Yeah, but you can make it physical. I come to this, okay? So this tells you that this U1 path can be regularized, okay? So in fact, with this, you can have the energy, the finite energy monopole solution, which has this mass, 7, okay? So all these predictions comes to the right region. So this is the regularized monopole. The best one is a singular monopole. The red one is a regularized monopole. And they are not so different, okay? Only in so asymptotically, of course, they are exactly the same. Only the short distance part, it changes, okay? Now, this is diode, the finite energy diode, okay? So here, you can really see that there is a way to have finite energy monopole in the standard mode, okay?
Can have, but need not have.
Hmm?
Can have, but need not have, depending on what choices I make for epsilon. Is that right?
Well, so listen. So now, I showed the logic, I explained the logic. Now, you can go real, okay? You can go to real world and adopting this approach and making this epsilon and the G prime more realistic. That means the physical that you have in the standard mode, okay? And then these guys, Ellis, John Ellis and their group, have recently shown that they can really make a prediction on mass, the real prediction, okay? So they have chosen, they have required this to satisfy the experimental constraint on this, okay? And then they have shown that mass should be less than 5.5. So this is really important because this tells you that LHC can produce this monopole.
So could you explain that now? Because it seems like if I make that epsilon a sharper and sharper function until I take the limit that it's almost a constant, then...
As I said, this is only, I showed you this as an example, but this one you can make, you can choose epsilon in such a way that this becomes real, okay?
So the question is, as you pick different functions,
exactly,
how does the 5.5 number change? Well, if you pick a particular function for epsilon,
I advise you to read John's paper because this.
No, just conceptually, there's a simple point, right? That if we make this function vary more and more steeply, we go back to the divergent case.
The problem with this one is that this becomes too divergent too quickly, so that this gives you too high cross section for the 2-photon decay of Higgs, okay?
So then it's not a prediction. You've already excluded.
Well, if you have this, then you must have the 2-photon decay of Higgs must be much bigger than what you have, okay?
What's weird is that it's like the statement is, so that if I did not modify the standard model, I'm happy with, I could have a monopole and I've got a parameter for it. I don't know what it is, but it's a parameter. And then now there's a statement that there's actually an upper bound on that mass, which...
You see, when you say if you do not modify the standard model, that doesn't mean anything, because as I said, in real world, we are talking about classical solutions, okay? And all these classical solutions in real world should be the classical solutions of the effective theory. And when you say standard model, this is real theory.
I would say the real world is quantum mechanical.
No, for instance, for QCD,
yeah.
You just take a QCD Lagrangian. Does this have any confinement or anything? Nothing. Okay. So you should have effective QCD. In other words, no perturbative QCD.
But I know that there's a limit to the theory that you're describing in which I can make the monopole heavy, and then I can certainly avoid all the bounds that I would have by having plenty of couplings of the Higgs to the gluon because I won't have them.
I'm not sure if that's true in this case. If you're trying to regularize the monopole by this Higgs coupling,
okay.
Then as you try to make it, so if you make it very, it has to go from zero at Higgs equals zero to one at Higgs equals better.
Right.
So it's got to have a certain average gradient. So the choice is where you make it sharp, where you make it steep versus not. It may be that, I don't actually know, if you make it really steep near the origin, that means you have strong coupling there and that might be bad for LHC.
So, of course, there are other ways to regularize the monopole, but I skip this. This is a bit technical. But what I want to tell you is the following. You can modify the Lagrangian to add this one. This is a quantum correction, okay? Here, I put the alpha, beta, and gamma arbitrary. Okay? So in principle, after quantum correction, you can have this for instance, this is what magnetic momentum. Okay? All these things will change to a real physical value. Okay? So alpha, beta, and gamma represent all these physical numbers. Now then, of course, you can do many things, but you can even have, so when you put these numbers, okay, of course, this is particular, and this is not realistic, I admit, but if you choose these numbers, then you have even analytic monopole solution in Bohr-Mollier limit. And this is this one, very simple as a Brasov-Sommerfeld monopole, but it's not exactly the same, okay? Very close. And this mass is 5 PeV. So all these terms, all these things converse to together, to 4 to 10, okay? So these are the analytic solutions that I showed you, but I'll skip this, okay? And of course, there are other arguments. For instance, standard model is not real unification because SU2 cross U1 has to immerse this, has to be put into a simple group, okay? So if you have any simple group in real unification, of course, the monopole, we should have a regular, I mean the finite energy monopole. So this is another argument that why we should expect finite energy monopole, okay? But anyway, so now, what are the physical implications? So first, it explains why Dirac monopole has not been discovered. As I said, the Dirac monopole with the magnetic charge 2 pi over E over 2 pi doesn't exist, okay? So even if somebody has claimed that they found it, this is wrong. That kind of doesn't exist, okay?
Do you worry about cosmological bounds on monopoles? Or what are the arguments people would
make? These are very interesting questions, okay? Yeah. More importantly, it explains why the search for the monopole has failed so far. Because so far, we have not reached the monopole production threshold. So how could you find the monopole? This was impossible, okay? All these squid experiments, all these things. Of course, you could have a cosmological remnant, but this is another. So now metal has a good chance to detect it. Okay. Now, of course, if the monopole mass becomes above 7, then of course LHC cannot produce it. So this is really, you know, if we had the SSC, I'm sure that they already have discovered this monopole. SSC was planned to be a 20 TeV, and then they could easily produce this monopole. Okay, but they missed it. They didn't make it. And as I said, this is the first topological elementary particle. Moreover, this. From the pragmatic point of view, this is very important because this is stable. You can put this in the museum, okay? Higgs exists only 10 to the minus 10 seconds. So Higgs, you can't do anything with Higgs. But this one, you can even make a magnetic current. For instance, if you make the accelerator with this monopole, you can make accelerator the size 100 times smaller. Simply because this coupling, okay? So it has huge potential, huge practical application. So this is really important thing, okay? So of course the important issue is, of course, we have to study first. The first thing that you have to do is that you have to calculate production rate at LHC. LHC, it's a 7, it's a 14, it's almost the threshold, okay? So So near the threshold, you should really have a better idea how frequently you can produce this monopole. Okay? Roughly speaking, of course, from the logical point of view, this production rate should be 1 over alpha times bigger than W plus W minus. Because as I said, the coupling, okay? The coupling is 1 over alpha times bigger. But we are near the threshold. This is very sensitive, okay? So near the threshold, the production rate could really go down quickly. So we have to have a better estimate. This is one of the most important issues. I don't think anybody has done this. To do this, first we have to identify what is the production mechanism. Normally, people said that it's a Drellian process, but this may not be so. Now they think that the photon fusion process is much more important. And because this coupling is 1 over alpha, you cannot apply the perturbative calculation. Okay? You cannot trust perturbative calculation. So there's really no simple way to estimate this. Okay? Now, of course, the cosmic monopole, this is also very important. If the mass is bigger than 7 TeV, we have to look at the cosmic remnant. And then you have to know the early universe production rate and the remnant monopole density and so on. And then, you know, all this huge, the magnetic field in the universe, cosmic magnetic field, the monopole should have a very strong acceleration, and you can have all kinds of interesting things. Okay, the challenge. Now, the perturbative expansion. How can you justify this? More importantly, how can we construct quantum field theory monopole? We need quantum electromagnetodynamics, okay? Which should replace the QED. This is totally and also, what are the new physical processes that the monopole can induce?
I thought you argued previously that you were supposed to expect the monopole to be a classical solution of some effective Lagrangian.
Pardon?
I thought you argued previously that the monopole was supposed to just be a classical object.
Yes, but you should have it.
So I don't understand why do you need to have a quantum field theory for a classical object? Like, you obviously need to quantize excitations about.
Well, you have to quantize. You have to quantize the theory, okay? So when you quantize the theory, you have to deal with this magnetic coupling. This is, of course, one of the most important problems in, I think, theoretical physics. And also, what are the cosmological implications? And can the gravity? So here, I didn't couple this monopole to gravity. This is, again, another very interesting subject. So can the gravity regularize the monopole, or can make it a black hole? All kinds of interesting questions. So do we have monopole stars or whatever, okay? So certainly this is a new physics. And I'll just show you the references. The most recent one, this one just came out last week. So I strongly urge you to read this, the last one, okay? So thanks.
Thank you.
We've had
lots of questions over here, so.
I have one to ask.
Maybe one last one.
No, yeah, that's like a bigger than that.